The Nine News podcast is brought to you in association with Freddie Flaxman. All right, everybody, and welcome to episode 312 of the 9 Years podcast. I am Nick Draper. I am joined, as always, by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. And this week, Stu, I am reminded of the song we used to sing many decades ago before I was born. So don't ask me now how I know this. But all we are saying is give us a goal. Do you remember singing that?
Yeah, I do. Do we sing it that often? We used to score quite a bit.
It just seems to be a song that from a bygone era that has not returned to the modern era and perhaps should, because AFC Wimbledon at the moment are really struggling to score. But hey, we're not conceding either any goals. We're going to be talking about our 2-0 draws this week with Carlisle and Northampton, talking about some of the tactics behind that. We're also going to have a look at referee abuse, an interview with Danny Macklin. We have on that side of it Jackson 5, and a look ahead to the visit of Hartlepool United, potentially Jeff Stelling as well on Saturday. Stu, just very briefly then, the 2-0 draws, Carlisle and Northampton, as I said. Carlisle, one of the worst games of football I've ever seen. Northampton, it really was poor. It was so poor. Northampton, again, not a great game, very short on chances once again. However, entertainment low, but two good points for us against teams in the top four.
Yeah, do you know what? If you're playing a computer game for us, say Football Manager, you could literally just fast forward it or just, you know, let me know what the result is and you go, oh, crap, 2 points against teams that, well, third and fourth in the league. So, yeah, they're good points. They're not good games to watch, though. And that's, it's a difficult one, isn't it? You know, I was sitting there sometimes thinking last season when we got relegated, if we had just picked up single points here and there, we would have stayed up, ironically, do you know what I mean? So points, yeah, points on the road are never a bad thing, and especially against teams, you know, in and around you.
Just teams around us.
Well, they're not far away from us. They're the top, you know, I was looking, it's interesting, so Nick Zanev had his 13th clean sheet of the season, which puts him joint level behind Leinor, 19 clean sheets, which is not a surprise, you know, why they're out in front. But when I looked at it, I think 7 of those clean sheets were against teams in the top half of the table, and probably most of the majority, like Leyton Orient, Carlisle, Stockport, Tranmere was in one of those who've done well, Bradford. So you think about the clean sheets he's actually had, they're against good sides. So they're not bad point. They're not bad clean sheets to have. You know, if you don't let a goal in, you're going to at least draw a game. You just got to score at the other end. So, hey, look, there's nothing worse. You know, if we were conceding goals and having to score 2 or 3 goals to get a point, then you're in trouble. So it's a solid base. I think the big challenge, I know we're going to discuss obviously later, but the big challenge now is playing a team that are in free fall in the bottom two. And can we, you know, can we move that defensive base that we have into a bit more of a forward thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we've lost to any of the bottom six. I think we've lost 9 games in League Two this season, and 5 of those were against teams in the top 7. A further 2 of those were to Sutton, unfortunately. But, you know, I think it makes the point there what you're saying about taking up points against the teams towards the top end of the table. There were 2 main tactical things I want to think about. I mean, actually, before I get onto that, clean sheets, Nick Zanev, absolutely. Has he been your pick of the... For me, against Carlisle, Alex Pearce was our man of the match, but Nick had to make certainly 1 or 2 very, very good saves. Northampton, yeah. Again, he seemed to be arguably our... He got in the team of the week, actually, for Tuesday night. So, been our outstanding or been our best performer this past week?
Yeah, you know what? I think I agree with you about Alex Pearce. On against Carlisle and at Northampton, you know, I think Nick Zanev had to do 2 decent saves, especially one at first half when it come across the air and he got out and, you know, saved it. So the weird thing with it is he hasn't got a lot to do. It's not as if we're bombarded, and it's like in a way a team going for the championship where their goalkeeper has to be on the money, do you know what I mean? Concentrating, because Zverev hasn't got a lot to do with respect, do you know what I mean? I think the only thing that I think really lets us down with Zverev is his kicking still. You know, ball from feet, we do lose a lot of possession when it goes back to him. Not saying that we don't lose possession when it goes from the outfield players, but I think if we can just work on maybe his distribution. But then you've got our players to hit. You know, when you've got Josh Davison as a target, it's not easy.
Yeah, and just on a quick point about team selection, Harry Pell was rested on Tuesday night, who does seem to win most, or at least before this week, before Carlisle, does seem to win a lot in the air when we do go long. So do we know any reasons behind that? Was it purely a tactical thing? Was it a fitness thing? Any ideas?
I believe it's just a rest. And you know what? If we could do it with Josh Davison, I think nothing wrong in giving Harry Pell a rest, Josh Davison a rest. If you look at, obviously, Amani Little stayed in midfield, and he had Al Hamadi, Janna, and Chiz in, you know, in front of Josh Davison. Apparently, I haven't watched it, but John Brady, the Northampton manager, has said that we basically done them a little bit because they were preparing to face Harry Pell and obviously the threats that Harry Pell gives, and we didn't play that. Not that I think we... Hey, look, let's be fair. To be fair, today I've been doing a highlight package for our show on Saturday, and I could probably have fitted Carlisle and Northampton to about 3 minutes. I think I've only extended it by about a minute and a half, as basically showing them coming out of the tunnel and then showing them shake hands at the end of the game has maybe extended it. Because there isn't much action, I'll be truthful. Like, and if you actually look at chances in front of goal, next to nothing.
No,
and you know, I'll just say, you know, your expected goals, of course, I know you love your expected goals. We've done well to hit 0.5, I reckon, for expected goals across both games.
Yeah, we are really, really struggling to create chances. I said the Carlisle game was one of the worst games of football I've seen in my life. It's certainly in the conversation for one of the most boring matches I'd seen. And even though the last 15 minutes or so did liven up a little bit, the life had already been sucked out of me by that point. It was so poor. But in terms of our chance creation, I don't want to talk about this because a lot of people are pointing to the loss of Ayuba Sal as the reasons behind this, our lack of goals. As we say, we've only scored once in our last six games. But we were struggling to create chances before Ayuba left. I know we spoke about it, seemed like every week on a podcast. We're not a team that creates chances. It's the way we set up to go about games. We're very defensive and we play low risk football and we look to catch teams on the counter attack. And what I thought we saw with Carlisle and Bradford and Stockport were teams that, despite being above us in the table and pushing for promotion, they were very wary of committing numbers forward because they realised that our threat was purely on, well, either the counter attack or set pieces. So yeah, they didn't commit numbers forward either. And these games just become these weird, like, stalemates. Like, it's a game of chess almost, where no one really wants to go too far on the attack in case they get caught out behind. And is it not time we loosen the shackles a little bit? We're safe. We're not going down. Just have a little bit of fun.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. Again, not to give too much away for our show, but I was doing some number crunching, as you do, looking at playoff in terms of average points that people got relegated on. I think we're on 41. I think the highest that people got relegated on is 47. So we're probably 2 wins away from that. So you'd think that, hey, look, it's got to, unless every team below us quality dealing with that, winning all the games, I think we're easily safe. Yeah, we do have to find, you know, and there's definitely in the transfer window, we bought players in, McAteer, Jazami, Janna, you know, we bought players in that are more attacking. I agree with you. I think any difference with Ayub was that Ayub could create something from nothing. You know, he could get a ball in his half and just run. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, it wasn't as if we were creating loads of chances. You know, to be fair, Ayub was creating chances for himself. That's why I think Saturday's a really big. You know, we've got two games. We've got Hartlepool and Gillingham, both in the same area of the table, both different propositions. Hartlepool conceded about 50 goals this season. So, you know, if we don't, well, my cat just wants to join my table. Bless him. She caught sick, she was in.
Hold on, wait. Yeah. Sorry. We have to stop. I'm sorry to interrupt your train of thought here, but the cat's already done it. So the cat has interfered with Stu's webcam there. That's the problem with his laptop there. Now, you said the cat, he's jumped on my table or she's jumped on the table. Sorry, I've given him the wrong sex. What sex is the cat? This is very, we need to know. Does the cat even know?
It's gender neutral, to be honest with you.
Okay, let's non-binary. That one. Can we go for a non-binary cat?
The thing is, right, she's just literally gone behind my screen and now she's having a scratch.
Definitely a she.
And it, definitely a she, because she's annoying. But yeah, I'm just going to just give her a nudge. There you are. She's just fallen off the table. Well, she hasn't fallen. I've just pushed her off the table. My trailer full. I forgot now what we're talking about. Oh, yeah. So,
Hartlepool Engineer.
Yeah, so they're both different games. So Hartlepool, I'll say 50-odd goals conceded, you know, a boring record. Are we, you know, they're going to come to our place and go for a draw. Let's be fair. Do you know what I mean? They will see a draw as a good result. We can't have another draw. We can't have another 0-0 draw. So we're going to have to push forward. Does that leave us susceptible on the break? Potentially. But it's a, you know, I think Saturday is probably a bigger challenge than actually laying Norwich away, Stockport at home. And because I think it, I'm not saying the crowd would turn because they'd be absolutely stupid to turn. But of course, they do want to be entertained. Yeah, especially when you can't drink alcohol at half time, which again was them. Like, do you know what? I don't drink anymore, so I can have a laugh. Do you know what I mean? As long as they set up high and they set a drink, I'm all right. But it's turmoil half time. It was like we've been turned over 4-0 at home, like Mansfield did at Carlisle on Tuesday night. It was like people were in despair. But yeah, in all seriousness, they do want to be entertained, and that we can't have another 0-0 draw. Or another 0-0 draw with literally hardly any chances.
Yeah, we can have a chance-laden 0-0 in which teams create many chances, just can't put the ball in the back of the net. So one of those I'd settle for, as long as we feel entertained. What I'm wondering about, and we will come back onto Hartlepool and the issues at the stadium on Saturday as well, but a lot of people are saying, hey, look, yeah, so it's not very entertaining, but we are solid as a rock, we're not conceding goals, and we're building ourselves a platform to progress on next season. My worry about that logic is we've still got a number of loan players in the squad. We don't know whether they're going to be here next season or not. I think we've all been taken by Armani Little, who started really, really well, albeit he's kicked Chislett off set pieces, which is, again, not helping us in terms of creating chances. DJ looks really, really good to me. I know you were saying to me before we started recording, Stu, that he might not be fully fit yet, but I think what we've got there is a player that looks strong and mobile, which is a great combination to have. So I'm very excited to see what he'll be like for us. But as we say, these players don't know whether they're going to be here next season. Alex Pearce, for me, has been the outstanding player for us since, well, in 2023 so far. Are we going to get another season out of him next year? I don't know what the plan is. Is Hussein Billah going to be here next season? Is Jack Curry going to be here next season? All these questions. So yes, building a platform, but at the same time, potentially another summer of overhaul ahead of us.
Yeah, do you know what? Players, in a way, are not the biggest thing that I've got to... sorry, it's cat again. my days. Yeah, it's not as if... I think it's more a case of how are we going to play under Johnny Jackson. I think that's more a case. So you're right. You know, when we say about loan players not going to be here long, well, we've had players that have been here for a year and they go. So I think it's more a case of how Johnny wants to play. So we can't... hey, look, I've said to you before, back to front is probably the best way of playing, but you can't keep playing that way. One thing we're not doing at the moment is we're not bringing our fullbacks up. Our fullbacks are hardly getting over the halfway line because we're going so direct. And also, they're not committing. So I'm more interested in saying, because you're right, we will probably lose players. So I'm more interested in what players Johnny wants to bring in, and more importantly, what style he wants to play. Because we've got to be... If we are going to try and year on year progress, and you know, so as they were, I'll say we're looking on to finish what 10 to 14th, I would say that's roughly where we're going to finish.
Yeah.
If we want to push on year, our next one will be trying to push for the outside playoffs. You have to score a bit. You have to score more goals to do that. So yes, it's good to have a solid base, but equally we're going to have to be a bit more adventurous. So hey, look, he's had two transfer windows, and actually haven't been. Bad transfer window, so the summer one is more important. Of course, you know, we've got I'm not too sure Johnny's contract. Has he got a year contract, or do we? Because I really do think he's earned a new contract if he's only on a year contract at the moment. So There's a lot of things. 16 games to go, but it's a really big, important summer.
It is, as it stands, 22 league goals in our last 25 games. Do you want to go into Jackson 5 early this week? Because this run got me thinking of a time when, in my Wimbledon supporting life, we were struggling to score goals. Now, I remember at the end of our first season in the conference, we ended that really poorly and we were really struggling to score goals. If you remember, we lost 2-0 at home to Grays Athletic, who were the worst team I think they'd ever played in the conference by that stage. I remember at the end of our first season up in League One, I think we went the last six games without scoring a goal, even though we were long, safe, neatly ensconced in mid-table. I think the win over Milton Keynes ended our season that season. I think we'd achieved what we were going to achieve that year. But actually, going back, 1997-98, I vividly remember lots of nil-nil draws towards the end of the season. All right. In fact,
Wow.
I actually looked it up and some of the stats I found fascinating from that season. Okay, we finished about 15th, 16th in the end. All
Yeah.
right. That was a season we won 3-0 at Palace and Carl Eban scored twice with two headers.
Which I saw on YouTube. There was a year, I
Yes.
think I sent a link. Oh my days. I haven't seen those goals for so long. They were sweet.
Yeah, I love that. I could watch that. I could watch that on a loop all
Yeah.
day. But anyway, that season, out of interest, the first thing I did was have a look. So currently, as it stands to you, I think we've had seven nil-nil draws this season, and we've had six games that have finished 1-0 either way. And in 97-98, we ended the season with eight nil-nil draws and eight games that finished 1-0 either way. We finished the season with six clean sheets in our last nine games. Okay. But in the other three games of that run, we conceded 12. We got hit by five by Arsenal and six by Spurs, and then a goal at Leeds as well. We only scored 34 goals in 38 games, but we kept 13 clean sheets. If you take away that Arsenal game, that Spurs game, and we let five into Man U as well at Selhurst Park, we only conceded 30 goals in 35 games. So goals were really at a premium, 97, 98. So therefore, my question is, Stu, our top goal scorer that season got four goals. However, it was a joint top goal scorer, five players.
No way.
Which five players were our top scorer that season on four? And if you think about it
No.
logically, you've got six guesses. I think you might be able to get this.
If I can remember. Well, yeah, it's always Marcus Gale would be one.
No.
Neil Hardley.
No.
Oh, my days.
Carl
Clark Stoll.
Court is one, yeah. So one in three.
Jason Yule.
Yep, two in four.
Dean Holdsworth.
Wasn't with us by then. No, gone off to Bolton by that point. So that's
Ah.
two in five.
Patrick Adjemang.
No, well before his time. You're going to kick yourself. Do you want the full list?
Yeah, go for it.
So who did you say? You said Carl Court and Jason Yule.
Yes.
Carl Leeburn, obviously. Half of his
You gave
goals were
me
against Palace.
a you gave me a clue.
Yeah, did. Carl Leeburn, Efan Okoku.
Wasn't too sure. That's mad, isn't it? The talent in that team.
And then I'll give you a toss-up between two, arguably the two most talented players ever to play for Wimbledon Football Club.
Mr. Hughes.
Yeah, Michael Hughes. Robbie Earl was the other one. He got three. So,
That's mad, isn't it? When you think about, well, my cat is still trying to. Sorry, my cat needs to. But do you know what? If we have this many attempts at goal on Saturday, as she's had attempts to get onto my table, then I'll be happy.
it's okay. The audio is unaffected, so that's fine. That's the main thing. It's all good. The full list of goal scorers, I'm going to run it through you now. So we had those five who scored four goals each. Robbie Earl scored three. Neil Ardley and Marcus Gale got two each that season. Peter Fear also got two goals that season, and they both came in the one game against Spurs. That leaves Kerry Hughes, Chris Perry, Andy Roberts, Starley Solbakken, and a Gary
Oh,
Rowett own goal, all on one each.
mad, isn't it? But then, to be fair, like, if you're that tight, I know if you're that tight, I can't remember. It's really weird, isn't it? Because statistically, back then it wasn't as heavy on stats, was it?
No.
I doubt very much there was many. Well, there wasn't a podcast around that time, but there wasn't anything sort of highlighting how bad you were scoring. You just literally read the program, and that
Know,
told you, didn't it?
Do you know what though? We had a good number of fanzines back then. I think we had a fan. We would have had Hoof the Ball Up. We would have had a fanzine, if you remember it, called Route One, I think, which was A4 and had a glossy cover. So there were some people knocking about.
The fanzines were quality, weren't they? It's weird now because I don't know whether I'd read a fanzine now, probably, to be fair, because
Because we are a
I don't
fanzine. We are an audio fanzine.
of course, and now the information is so much readily available for you, you see it instantly, don't you? So,
Yeah. The internet has ruined many things. I wish it had never been invented.
can I just say one thing? I'm going to off topic here, but I literally was looking at Chat GPT. Is it GPT or something? Artificial
Yeah.
intelligence. Oh
Yeah.
my days! The world is over. It's mind blowing. I don't know if anyone's seen this, but David Guetta done a song, wrote by Eminem, sung by Eminem, that actually was artificial intelligence. It is just like, so we could literally write in years to come. We could do a podcast with neither of us actually being here,
Might improve it.
And AI will basically talk. So I'm sure AI who was listening to this would be talking about a cat quite a lot, but it's just mind-boggling. I can just sense in, I can sense in the next couple of years, who's gonna be writing thing? Who gets a copyright for it?
Oh,
You could literally,
humanity's
they could nick our voices and remaster them.
Sex robots and AI, Stu. Western civilization is doomed.
Coming from
Doomed,
China.
I tell you. As I keep telling everyone, one day someone will believe me. They'll look back and they'll go, "Oh, actually, yeah,
The
no, you're
world is
right.
over."
Yeah, we've not got long left, Stu. Enjoy it whilst you can.
I'm trying
Anyway,
to.
right. Well, what else have I got on our list? So I wanted to touch briefly on but referee abuse before I do that, because you've already mentioned it. The issues experienced at the stadium on Saturday. Hey, look, Stu, there are two recurring themes as a West Stand season ticket holder. Two
In the
recurring
posh
themes that I'm hearing in the posh seats, yeah. But I hear these two things over and over and over again. So it's not just me, okay? This is a large number of people. Advertising hoardings are still too bright. I say ditch them completely. I keep hearing about you just need to lower the brightness of it or the lux or whatever it is or whatever it is. Just ditch them completely. Just get rid of them. I don't care. The other one, ironically, considering it has a tendency not to actually work, is the loudness of the public address system. Some may say Tannoy, but that's a brand name. Okay, it's like when people say Frankenstein, when actually it's Frankenstein. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The PA, I must admit, when it has been on, and particularly against Gillingham in the League Cup, which might be a distant memory for most people, we moved seats for that just to sit at a different part of the ground for the sake of doing it, but just pretty much in line with the 18-yard line at the South Stand end. We couldn't stand seats at half time because it was so loud, you had to try and get away from it. So, yeah, anyway, those two issues. Ironically, on Saturday, ad hoardings were taken out, PA was taken out because of a power surge, and as you say, Stu, which led to once again alcohol sales being suspended at half time. CCTV wasn't working, and that's a condition of our license, apparently. But it just seems to be one. If it's not something, it's another. If it's not one thing, it's your mother. It's like, yeah, what's going on?
Interestingly, I sometimes wonder, and I didn't ask Danny this on our Sunday Night Live, which is still available and been really well received. But someone said, and I got me thinking, like, is Danny a bit more switched on with our regulations, etc., that maybe he is always erring on the side of caution? It's not what I mean by that is he understands fully what our license is. Did we get away with things before? Although I can't recall the PA going as many times as it has. The advertising boards, yeah, I get you. I literally, as soon as I came out on Saturday, I was like, they are crazy. Like, Ryegas was in bright orange. Surely we know that doesn't work. I don't know about turning them off because obviously it's revenue, but maybe just put them on top of the stand rather than on the bottom, if that's possible. But surely, it's not as if it's a new thing in football. Every other club has advertising boards. So what is it wrong with ours? To be fair, they did go, didn't they? I did see a flash, and I think that might have been the emergency power coming on. And then I saw almighty smoke coming out of behind the goal.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think the pies are on fire. And then we heard it was the generator that was struggling. We laughed. Then we heard so we didn't do a post-match show because basically non-essential power things were taken. So ours wasn't essential. the lifts weren't working, the thing. And we were laughing when we heard no alcohol, of course you are. And then all of a sudden I thought, one second, I hadn't got enough power to do my naked chips at half time. So suddenly I got into panic mode. But no, we're okay. But in all seriousness, you know, we're obviously losing money from that. The power, Danny was right, you can't test the emergency power until the situation arises, which I get that. But he must have think he walked in shit before he comes to Wimbledon, because it's every problem that could possibly be. You know, you think about it, he's had the turnstile problems, hasn't he? He's had the PA problems. It just feels like it feels like unfairly that all these sort of the buck stopping with him, mainly because he's making the buck stop with him because he's taking ownership and accountability, which is great. Yeah. But equally, I think we need to be, you know, it was a house surge and it was in the South Wimbledon area, wasn't it? But he must have been praying for. It can't keep happening. And you're right, when the PA does work, I hear people in East End say they can't hear a thing. Yeah. You're right, where we are can hear everything. You know, it was funny when I got to the ground, so I did the stadium tour Saturday morning, and the PA was on. I'm guessing they turned it on to make sure it worked and then kept it on. And it was playing. I literally had a sore throat, so I was trying to talk over it.
Yeah.
So it was loud where I was on the touchline. But yeah, you're right. It's got different levels of sound all around the ground. And it's obviously something that needs to be replaced. Cost-wise, I don't know what it is, but I think it is going to be replaced. I don't think Danny's going to... I think that would be... I think if you're going to spend any money in the summer, that's probably going to be a best bit of business done.
No, striker. That's what we need to spend money on as well.
What do you want, striker or PA system?
PA, actually. I can't deal with it.
Just get a striker that's part-time and a specialist on the PA.
Oh, do you know what? No, we could get someone, a player that is also a musician, like MC Harvey back. Or who is that guy we had in the very first season? He was like an Irish guy that had been on, I want to say, The X Factor. It might have been Pop Idol, back in the day. I forgot what his name is.
Wasn't Paul Smith. Paul.
Nah, I don't know what his name was. Not Paul Potts.
Yeah. I'm sure, to be fair, you can imagine him going mad on, giving the whole ground would just shudder. You're right. I can't think it was now.
No,
the MC Harvey.
Yeah.
MC Harvey, it was always classic, wasn't it? Everyone just kept saying, just kept shouting, shoot at him.
Yeah, ironic.
Anyway.
Yeah. We say that all the time now, but it's a forlorn hope.
By the way, do you know, I don't know if you saw, but there's a charity game in the summer.
There
MC Harvin's team is coming to Wimbledon. So, yeah, you know, might be good. Some celebrities on the pitch.
Anyone else that we know of? Or
the next Wimbledon team.
Okay.
Yeah, so that could be anyone. Hey, look, if it's from the Combine County days, you could have three
or
four teams.
I was going to say,
if they're still alive and walking.
I have been on the Heritage website in a long time to look at our list of ex-players, but it was like we just had a new few players every week. I still laugh when we got to the end of the second season. We thought, you know what? We're walking this league. Do you know what we should do? We should get Shane Smallkin. We should get the best player in the whole division and just sign him now, because why not?
Do you know what's funny? Obviously, I did a stadium tour and I've been doing it for a few weeks now. I absolutely love it.
How long are these tours?
Oh, mate, I think I've set a record. I think last Friday I did two combined tours that total 3.5 hours.
Wow.
I do warn them before they start, you know, have you got something to go to today, or you booked it out for the whole day? But yeah, when we start talking about the Combine Counties days, it's, and we've got a new, there's an, and we should have got a new board up now. I think like showing all the teams we played, I think like 720 different teams.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous when you look at it, because you've got like Cobham, Sandhurst with Man United, and Real Madrid, because we played Real Madrid in a friendly, didn't we? So the actual it's unreal, isn't it?
Anytime you see Frenford Senior on the same breath as Real Madrid. Anyway, we wanted to touch very briefly on another subject, which is referee abuse. I don't think we'll go into depth on it, and I think it deserves probably a podcast in its own right. But Stuart's really winding me up about abuse of referees.
Yeah.
Really winding me up. And I also had to have a little laugh on Wednesday when there was a picture circulating, and I think we actually put it out, the club put it out as well, of a little bit of shirt pulling on DJ by a Northampton player. And I know shirt pulling is a big grievance that a lot of people have, but there's also pictures that Northampton put out of Alex Woodyard ripping the shirt off a Northampton player. So it does happen both ways. I just really want to get over this conspiracy theory that feels like we're the only team that suffers from bad decisions. I think I want to stamp that one out first of all. But secondly, just start sending players off. Johnny Jackson got booked as well for arguing I see on a Tuesday night as well for moaning at probably the fourth official. I know Rob Tuvey has treaded that line thin ice a number of times.
Does get excitable, doesn't he? And you know what? I don't mind passion, but it's got to be controlled, especially from your bench. It's been interesting, isn't it? Because I think I'm not too sure if it's a new rule, but it looks like every third player that now comes to surround the referee gets booked.
Unless you play for Man City.
Yeah.
But anyway,
Personally, I've just booked the captain. I personally would, hold someone responsible. That would soon get the message across. I don't like it from our team. I really don't. I just don't see any need for it. I'd mic the referees up personally so that they can then, you can hear the players doing that. I just think it's, I said to you the other week on Twitter, I follow the FA and after every game, they literally are charging teams with surrounding the referee and that. But it's a fine. It's just nothing. These fines mean nothing in the Premier League. Book them with retrospective yellow cards. But the referees have got to get, what I would say, I watched the Man City Arsenal game and it was interesting that there was the threshold for abusing in terms of there was a booking for Man City goalkeeper for time wasting after 30 minutes. A foul throw where they encroached along the line was booked. So I'm just wondering, and also I think it was the Zen that was booked. They've just got to start going, I'm just going to book you because it's not acceptable. And also just remember, we were kids once, believe it or not, and what you see on the pitch, you replicate on the Sunday league and in a playground, and that's not. And if it keeps going, we won't have enough referees coming through the game to actually be there on a Saturday. So we need to be a bit careful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to agree and underline that point you make there about role models and examples being set to young people. It's not okay, and I don't think there's many areas of life where it would be accepted. But for some reason, society at the moment seems to accept these things. It makes not too much sense to me. Anne-Marie Godfrey was on Radio 5 talking about this on Tuesday morning. So if you want to go to the BBC Sounds, go on to the website, you'll be able to find that. It was about 9:15 in the morning. Nikki Campbell was the presenter. So go on to the BBC website, you'll be able to find Anne-Marie discussing that, of course, in her role as a qualified referee. We are running out of time, Stu, but I want to do a quick on this side of it this week. 3 minutes and walking past Centre Court on Saturday, and I realised Debenhams is no longer there. Centre Court is being completely, something's being done with the four floors that Debenhams had to build something new or some different thing there. My simple question is, Stu, which shop that is no longer with us would you like to bring back?
Woolworths.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say Woolworths. I think everyone says Woolworths.
The thing is, it had a time and place. It doesn't have a time and place now. It's very much like HMV, isn't it? Whereas HMV, I used to love going in. I know I just said Woolworths, but I'll give you what I mean by it. Is that when CDs and albums and that used to be released, I remember going to HMV and you could just put the headphones on and listen to the, and it felt exciting.
Yeah.
Whereas now I just download it. So I think, shops like Woolworths and HMV, purely for the fact that at that time, CDs and that, you could, and pick a mix, it was nice to have. They wouldn't survive now. So I suppose in a way, would I want to go back to that time? I don't know. I'll be younger.
I've got some good news for you, Stu. HMV still exists. There is an
not
HMV.
Not at the levels.
Not at the levels, but there is an HMV in Luton. There is an HMV in Guildford.
That's the time I forgot.
Well, this is true. Guildford's got a very nice HMV. Guildford's got a very nice city centre. I recommend people go down there. But yeah, so it still exists. I would want the HMV back in Oxford Circus because I think right now is that it's what was formerly their flagship store is now one of these stupid American candy shops. So actually, instead of bringing a shop back, I'd like to get rid of certain shops, and they would be vape shops, mobile phone shops, chicken shops, and American candy shops, which are they're clearly just a front for something else. Clearly. Anyway, anyone listening to me, you can sue me, but I don't think you'd win.
Do you know what? It just feels like every bit of spare land, like in Epsom recently, Fat Face has gone, and it's just replaced by a coffee shop. Everything turns into a coffee shop. I don't know how many coffee shops are needed at Epsom High Street. But basically, in Epsom High Street now, you have takeaways or delivery places for delivery, or you have coffee. So I don't know. I do you know what? I don't actually know why they need to have all these shops in the high street. I don't know, a residential. I don't know. You know, like what they call estates, where they just literally have a massive block of massive block, and they all just do delivery from there. Do you know what I mean? Or Just Eats and curries and that come out from there. That it's been a high street. No one uses them.
Now, certainly avoid the issue of motorbike riders just parked outside everywhere, literally everywhere I go. But hey, we are living in a dystopia these days, and we won't pull at that thread for now, because otherwise I won't stop. But anyway.
Very, very quickly, while we're talking about coffee shops, of course, there is a Starbucks being built opposite Plough Lane.
Yeah, I've heard this. Potentially a Starbucks and a Greggs.
Well, if it's a Greggs, it's a game changer, because everyone loves a Greggs, so I may even get a Greggs cardigan or jumper, as they keep
Oh,
saying at the moment. But
Jesus. I
I
saw
know,
someone
but
wearing the full tracksuit the other day. The Primark
it's
made Greg's tracksuit.
genius. It's just free advertising. It's genius.
It's the decline of Western civilization, Stu.
But it's a fair old, to be fair, it's a fair old site. Obviously, I've been there recently, and it's a fair old site there. But yeah, it's a big Starbucks. I'm not really a Starbucks person, if I'm being truthful. But if it's got a Greggs, then that's a choice I've got to make, because of course Greggs do great sausage rolls, but can they compete with the My Pie sausage rolls at Power Lane? I don't think so.
It'll be an interesting one. Perhaps if you get to Plough Lane quite early on a Saturday, for example, if you're called George, you might find that Greggs is your only place to go for some hot sustenance. But anyway, we're running out of time. So, Hartlepool United. Perhaps George will get there early on Saturday for the visit of Hartlepool United. They are coming a long way. They sit 23rd in League Two currently. However, they have won two of their last six games. So they're doing better than we are. 7 points from the last six, much like ourselves. But they have scored seven goals. Imagine what that must be like. They took a point off Sutton United. Imagine what that must be like. Anyway, Keith Curl has been in charge since the 21st of September. He came in after Paul Hartley was sacked very early on the season. They actually went 11 games. Well, their first 11 games of the season, they didn't win any of them. They won their first game of the season on the 4th of October, I believe. We drew nil-nil at Victoria Park earlier in the season. I'm interested in their top scorer, Josh Umera, who has got 10 goals in League Two this season. However, he was taken off at half-time in their defeat at Crewe. Wondering why that was. That could have been tactical. He was substituted for Brendan Kiernan, of all people. But Hartlepool did have a man sent off against Crewe, so maybe that was to do with it.
To be fair, he's a player that I highlighted. Interesting. He come from Willesden, where I think he
Okay.
scored, was a top goal scorer. So again, why it's frustrating with our scouting network, because why Hartlepool signing a player from Willesden when realistically they're on our back, around our backyard. Around our backyard, you know what I mean? Around the corner
Yeah, then around the
ish
game.
compared to Hartlepool. But yeah, it was subject to a bid from Burnley Albion apparently in a January window, but Hartlepool said no and kept hold of him, which is rightly so, because if they're going to stay up, then surely he is going to be instrumental for them. So he's the one to watch. But yeah, Hartlepool dropped, like I say, dropped into the bottom two. Gillingham come out of it, not a surprise. So hey, look, do you know what? It's a big game. It's a big game. Big game for them, but I think it's a big game for us, because, like I say, we've got to score some goals. We really have. Can't be having zero on Saturday. Really can't. We've got to push the boat out a little bit and get our attacking options going.
I'm anticipating that we will look to take the game to Hartlepool from the off on Saturday, and if you get an early goal, then hopefully things will turn for us. But well, we will have to wait and see. Do you have a scoreline prediction? I think we will score on Saturday.
Yeah, I do. I don't think it'll be loads. I think it'll be a 1-0 win.
Fair enough. I have a horrible feeling that we will also concede, and it'll end up being a 1-1 draw or something like that. We'll just somehow struggle to get the victory. But hey. We wait and see. You mentioned Burton Albion there. Burton Menswear. That'd be a shop I'd bring back. They disappeared, didn't they? Where are they gone?
lows in there. There's absolutely
Oh,
lows.
do you know what as well? Sorry, the one I didn't mention, which is very particular and very specific, but talking about food there with Greg's and My Pie and everything like that, Chan's Fish and Chips on the Yule Road, Tolworth Broadway. Oh my word. If anyone out there listening remembers Chan's Fish and Chips, it was the greatest fish and chip shop that has ever existed in the history of mankind. And it's not been with us for a number of years now. It must be close to, God, 15, 20 years maybe. But yeah, I think about it every day.
Can I just say, right, how much cost of living at the moment, right? I know it's funny. I remember you used to buy a portion of chips for a couple of quid. Now it's like putting a mortgage out. It's like, it's expensive. And to be fair, the chippy around the corner from me at Tapman Corner is closed, I'm guessing because no business and stuff like that. So, yeah, fish and chips is going, well, yeah, extortionate, but they're not alone in that, are they? So, yeah.
Yeah, chippies out, nail salons in. Seems to be the way of the modern world. Anyway, updates from the game with Hartlepool will be available on Twitter at 9YRSPodcast, and we'll be back with 9 Years TV on Saturday as well. We have got just a moment to spare, Stu. Just a very quick word. I did forget we saw Nathan Jones of Luton, formerly of Luton Town, left to go to Southampton. He was sacked in the week with Southampton bottom of the Premier League. Seems an absurd decision, as most decisions at the Premier League seem to be these days. But you referenced a very good point to that, which I think would be a nice note to leave people to think about over the weekend.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's saying that apparently Southampton say it's cost them £8 million in terms of they spent £4 million getting Jones released from his Luton contract. Crikey. You pay less, a lot less to get people out of Luton normally.
No, people don't leave Luton easily. It's a tough, tough decision to get out of there.
you could probably buy the whole Luton for £4 million, to be fair.
Fair.
But also room is £1.2 million a year on a 3.5 year contract. I have no sympathy for Southampton whatsoever because one, they recruited Nathan Jones, and two, they panicked. Do you know what? I think if he'd had a few different letters at the end of his name and sounded foreign, he'd be fine. It just makes me chuckle where the papers saying he's left them bottom of the league. Well, I think the players beforehand were close to the bottom of the league, so it's not as if he's coming with a. I just don't see what a manager's supposed to do. Like nothing. Let's be fair. Nathan Jones is set up for life. He's basically now got a Premier League move, and he's set up for life. But I just, yeah, I will say it's Luton, well done. Because let's be fair, £4 million. For manager, he must have had a hell of a contract at Luton. And it just makes you think. Normally you think about players having a release clause or something like that. But hey, I'm not saying Johnny Jackson's worth £4 million, but wouldn't it be nice to have a manager who was sought after like that? Because normally we chuck them out the back door. Wouldn't it be nice if they'd gone through the front door and thank you for your services?
And earned us a few, or more than a few pennies as well. But yeah, lots to think about there in terms of, as you say, contract managers profiting as well as a football club and being sustainable as a privately owned football club. But I'm sure we'll revisit that in the future. Anyway, Stu, for this week, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody for listening. We will sign off there with Alexa Bliss. Bag first, milk last. 2 plus 2 continues to equal 4. And we shall speak to you again next week.